Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and it's time for taking a look at your pet's health with our guest, veterinarian Dr. Marty Greer. She founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin, where she specializes in canine pediatrics and reproduction. But great to have her with us, her first visit with us, as a matter of fact, and wondering if your pet is allergic to its food. Which flea and tick prevention methods do you use? What other pet health questions do you have? Join in the number to call 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Marty Greer, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
So this is your first time, and I'm wondering about Veterinary Village, your clinic in Lamira. Tell us about it.
Well, it is a 40-year-old practice, still family-owned. We started the business in 1982, so we celebrated our 40th anniversary last summer. We have six doctors in that practice, including my husband, who works for me, just to be clear. He's also a veterinarian who did dairy practice for 24 years before he went into small animal. So we've got a pretty good-sized practice for a pretty small town. We're right on Highway 41, but we also have two practices in Sun Prairie. So we have two little practices there. One of them is the drive-through veterinary clinic checkout veterinary. So we've got our fingers in a lot of things in veterinary medicine right now.
You are a very busy person. I'm pretty sure of that. Well, spring is, you know, it's allergy season for many of us. What about our pets? Is it a time for our pets to be suffering allergies as well?
Oh, definitely. And what a lot of people don't recognize are the things that they may come in with concerns about that truly are allergies. It may be ear infections. It may be licking at the feet. It may be vomiting and diarrhea. It may be skin problems. So allergies manifest themselves in many ways in our pets, but generally not as hay fever. So the kind of allergies that we see in people causing that runny nose, itchy eyes, hay fever kind of symptoms, dogs may be reacting to the same pollens, but they react differently. So they react through their skin instead of through their nose and eyes. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. What about cats? Are they do they suffer? I have two cats, so I'm wondering if they suffer.
Yeah, cats. Yeah, cats have some allergies as well, but not nearly to the same degree that we see in dogs. They, for one thing, they're inside most of the time, so the exposure can be a lot less. And for another, they just seem to have different kind of immunity to what they'll react to. But yes, they can have food allergies. They can have all the same kind of allergies that we see in our dogs.
Well, let's talk about dogs here for a few minutes. You said that the allergies display themselves differently in sometimes in dogs than they do in people. So how do you know if your dog has an allergy?
Well, that's a great question. And there are so many different symptoms that we kind of have to go through it. And it kind of breaks down into different kinds of allergies. So we see contact allergies, which are allergies that dogs get from actually physically contacting something they're allergic to, like a wool blanket. We can see flea allergies, which are related to flea bites. So we can see them breaking out on their skin from that. So contact allergies and flea allergies cause skin problems. We can see inhalant allergies, which is a pretty common problem. And that, like I said, is similar to hay fever in people, where they get the runny eyes, runny nose, sneezing, itchy, you know, just really kind of uncomfortable. And, you know, allergy medications on the human side have come a very long way, and they have on the dog side as well. So that's the great news, is a lot of these inhalant allergies, which are allergies to pollens, frequently tree pollens, grass pollens, weeds like ragweed, house dust mites, which are then year-round because there's no seasonality to having house dust mites. Those dogs will come in with scratching at their ears, ear infections, licking at their feet, biting at their feet. And a lot of people are confused on why that causes them to have allergic reactions on their feet. And then we have food allergies. And food allergies are usually vomiting and or diarrhea. Or what I think a lot of people don't identify particularly well with a food allergy is we have a lot of people that come in and they'll say, my dog is a really picky eater. You say, okay, well, what do you feed? And so we go through the whole thing of what do you feed? What have you tried? What haven't you tried? Have you seen any symptoms change? And it turns out a lot of dogs that are sensitive, maybe not quite allergic, but sensitive to food, just don't like the food that they're being fed. And they eat enough to stay alive, but they don't eat enough to really flourish. And so once we figure out that that may be the dog's tendency, is it's not just that they're fussy about their food, but they're actually not feeling well after they eat. If we can figure out what protein and carbohydrate that they're sensitive to, we change the food and it's like a different dog. Somebody throws a light switch and it's so fun to see these owners come in and say, finally, she eats like a lab.
I love that story. Well, is there a time of the year that allergies are worse for dogs and cats?
Oh, definitely. And that's going to be spring and fall, just like with us. When the trees start to pollinate and the little buds come out, we see a lot of issues right first thing in the spring. So we're getting close to that. As soon as we get the snow cover gone, we're going to start to see that pop. So we'll have dogs coming in with a lot of symptoms. And then again in the fall, late August and September, with ragweed, goldenrod, the typical pollens that we see that time of year, we'll start to see issues with that again. So a lot of dogs are pretty calm during the summer, but spring and fall are really difficult. And because the seasonality is so significant, we'll oftentimes see those dogs within a few days of, you know, each year within a few days. So we may see them on April 24th one year and April 27th the next because they're allergic to whatever is pollinating at that time.
Oh, man. I'm wondering, you know, I think there may be a bit of inheritance connected with for humans, you know, if your mom and dad were, you know, hated ragweed or reacted to it, you will too. Is that true in dogs and cats?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Especially in dogs. It's not as well identified as a family issue in cats, but definitely in dogs. And so we encourage people in our practice to not breed dogs that they know have allergic reactions, especially the really difficult allergies to manage, which are the inhalant and contact allergies. The one of the problems with inhalant allergies is you can't get rid of the pollen. It's there.
Yeah.
You know, if you're allergic to a wool blanket and you get rid of the wool blanket, that makes it pretty easy. But if you're allergic to pollen, the only thing you can do is move someplace that doesn't have pollen, which I don't know where that is, maybe Alaska, but it's pretty rough.
Dr. Marty Greer, our guest, a veterinarian who founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lemira, Wisconsin. She has a couple of other satellite clinics as well in Sun Prairie and Sun Prairie area. Well, I invite you to join in with your own questions. We've been talking a bit, certainly, about allergies, and you may have questions in that area or other pet health questions. I hope you'll join in. Maybe your dog or cat has something going on. The number to call is 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Can an owner test to see if a pet has an allergy? I imagine a lot of times they have to come see you or another veterinarian for it, depending on the allergy.
Sure. And the answer is it depends. If it's a food allergy, we typically will do a food elimination diet and try to determine where we see changes in the dog's symptoms. If it's inhalant or contact allergies, there are some tests that you can find online that may be a blood test, it may be a saliva test, but really the gold standard test by the determination of most dermatologists is a skin test, just like we do in people, where they shave a spot off the side of the dog and then they do a series of a grid pattern of little injections of allergens and then see an hour or two later what the dog has reacted to based on the size of the wheal or the little lump that's created. So that's going to be the most effective way to determine exactly what the dog's allergic to. So I don't encourage people to do the blood test or the saliva test, but sometimes, you know, that becomes a good tool, but it's not the be-all and end-all. The tricky part is to try and figure out what it is. And the question is then, does it matter that much that we know what they're allergic to? If you're going to do hyposensitization, which is where people get those allergy shots where they actually inject you with the thing that you're allergic to in tiny doses and then gradually ramp it up so that your body develops less of an immune response to it, A few people will do that, but it's kind of expensive, and it works about 70% of the time on about 70% of the dogs. So it's not a guarantee that you could spend a lot of money and still not have a solution. So a lot of veterinarians have just gotten to the point that they say, yep, it's spring. Yes, it's fall. Here's some medication. And we have new medications on the market that are really great ones. For a lot of years, all we had was cortisone, prednisone, corticosteroids. And so those were good. But we have now some drugs on the market that are much more specific to treating an allergy. So it's not just shotgunning the immune system, but it actually approaches it from either an antibody level or from reducing the inflammatory chain in a different way than steroids do. So it's kind of interesting to see the changes and the improvements that we've had in veterinary allergy management.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Could you give me one example, perhaps, of one of those new?
Sure. So the two newest ones are, one is Cytopoint, and it's given as an injection every 4 to 8 weeks. It's just given under the skin, like a vaccination, simple to give. We see a really great response with a lot of dogs. So it really does change how their immune system responds. It's a monoclonal antibody approach instead of it being a drug. So it changes how the immune system responds. The other really commonly used drug is Apoquel, made by the same company. It's an oral medication. It's given at home twice a day for the first 30 days and then once a day after that. And again, we get really good responses. But just because one dog responds to one drug doesn't mean they will respond to both. So some dogs do better on Cytopoint. Some dogs do better on Apoquel. And if all else fails, we still can fall back on prednisone, our good old favorite steroid, at least for short-term use, because some of these dogs are so miserable that they're causing significant self-mutilation. And the last thing we want to do is send you something that's not going to solve your problem quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, lots of callers online with questions for you, Dr. Greer. So our lines are all full. Let's go to Kyle in Verona. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, hi, Larry. This is Kyle. So I just want to ask you and your guests, you know, I have a cat, and a lot of the time my cat, you know, she'll sneeze, and I sneeze as well. And, you know, I think it's, you know, mostly because of her and some dust as well. But I kind of wonder, you know, is there a reason why she might be sneezing? Could it be because of her cat fur that she's reacting to as well?
Yeah.
Great question. Cats are not usually allergic to other cats, but they can certainly be allergic to other things in the household. And one of the things that they frequently can be allergic to, and sometimes people forget to look for it, is the dust that is in cat litter. So you may want to try different kinds of cat litter, different fragrances of cat litter, go from clay to clumping or clumping to something else, pine, or now they're making some litters out of other materials. So there's a lot of new market products that you can find that may reduce her response. The other reason we see a lot of cats sneeze and sneeze chronically is that they may have a virus. Cats get herpes viruses, and just like any other herpes virus, they are sometimes very difficult to get rid of. So they may have a chronic low-grade herpes infection that you may never be able to completely resolve. So it's something that you probably want to check with your veterinarian about. If they have nasal congestion, they want to always check for a polyp down in the ear canal to see if there's anything going on with that, which was related to virus. But those would be the places I'd start looking, would be at environmental allergies and at chronic herpes.
I was thinking about my cat, Coco, who I was in bed, and Coco was up. I was trying to sleep, and so I was pretending I was asleep with my eyes closed, and Coco's looking over me, and I know he's about 4 inches from my face and sneezes.
Yeah. Yes, that happens to us a lot at the veterinary clinic. We give intranasal vaccines to dogs and cats, and we always get sneezed back on. So my staff laughs and says, we're never going to get kennel cough. We're never going to get Bordetella because we were just vaccinated again today. So it happens to us all the time.
Sam in Sturgeon Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Sam.
Hi, thank you both for having me on. I'm traveling through Sturgeon Bay with my wife here back to Madison, but we were wondering, we've had allergy testing with our dog, Buddy, who is a cockapoo, and he turned out to be allergic to many, many things, but the thing that he proved out to be highest in allergy to was dust mites and storage mites, and we've done the Cytopoint, and we've done the Apoquel, We're just wondering if the doctor would have any suggestions for us. We've switched foods, done just about everything we could think of. Just wondering if there's any other options left for Buddy at this point.
Well, at this point, it's probably a lot of management. There is a new Hill's diet called Derm Defense, which is an egg-based diet, and it's got a formula of anti-inflammatory fatty acids in it that does seem to give relief to certain dogs. So that might be something to take a look at as one of the diets, not because he's got a food allergy, but because the components of the diet also reduce inflammation. And when I was a kid, my sister still has allergies. I still have a sister. So it's not like she went away, but her allergies got better. And my mother was fanatical about managing the house dust mites and the other dust in the house. So they make special vacuum cleaners now that have filters on them that reduce the amount of dust that is created when you vacuum. Because when you're cleaning your house, I mean, dust mites and storage mites are just, they're going to be everywhere in your house, no matter how careful and how clean you are. And that's really unfortunate because people feel like they're not doing a good enough job. But those new vacuum cleaners help. They've got new filters on furnace filters and air conditioning filters now that can reduce it. Trying to keep surfaces that are really easy to keep dust free can be helpful if you've got blankets on the couch that you can wash frequently to cut down on dust and those kinds of things. That can help. My mother, I remember her, she used to put over the air returns in the house, she used to take cheesecloth and starch it and put it over the vents to cut down on the dust, because that was before we had good air filters. And the other question is if there's also a component of pollen allergies, because allergies are additive. So if they have a component of a dust mite allergy and then we add to it the summer and spring and fall allergens that we have from pollen, then that just puts dogs over the threshold. So minimizing their contact time with grass, minimizing their time outside, keeping the windows closed so that you run the air conditioner more. Those are all little things that can really help. I've got one client with a bulldog who took out all the grass in the part of the yard the bulldog goes into, and all he has is that fake grassy astroturf kind of grass. And so he's never contacting the pollens and the grass itself directly, and it has hugely improved his allergy.
Wow.
So there's environmental things you can do.
Sam, thank you so much for that question and comment. Let's go to Debbie in Green Bay. Debbie, hi. Thanks for calling.
I have two comments. First, I had gotten a stray cat that was throwing up a lot. We ended up finding out that she was gluten intolerant after lots of trial and error stuff. So I just wanted to throw that out. I also wanted to ask, I had a cat that I did an intolerance test on, and he seemed to be, from the intolerance test, putting that in air quotes, was allergic to chicken as well as a lot of fish. He seems to be doing so much better. His personality has changed. Could you please talk about the difference between an intolerance test and an allergy test?
Well, I think they're kind of on the same scale. It's just a matter of degree, because if you get intolerant enough, then it probably is an allergic reaction. But they're pretty similar. And basically, the primary way to manage it is going to be like you've done, and that's to eliminate those products from his diet. And sometimes that's hard, because oftentimes it's hard to figure out what the food is. And sometimes if you know, which food they're going to react to. And oftentimes the front of the bag is not revealing for what the entire content list is. So when you're shopping for food, whether it's online or at the store, you really need to flip the bag over and look at the ingredient list. Almost every website now will have the ingredient list on it if you click on that food. And you can look through it and see if there's even tiny components of something that they're allergic to. So if it's fish, they may put fish oil in and he may still be reacting, he or she may still react to that. So it is a challenge to find those foods, especially if those are the primary components of cat food are poultry and fish. It's pretty tricky to find a food that's going to be suitable for them. So it sounds like you've been successful with that.
And Debbie, thank you so much for calling. Our guest, Dr. Marty Greer, veterinarian. She founded Veterinary Village Small Animal Clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin, has satellite veterinary practices in Sun Prairie. She is our guest today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org if you have trouble getting in online. And just a reminder that Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer today, Clara Neipert, our producer, Trina LaSousa, our engineer, and I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Looking at your pet's health today with Dr. Marty Greer, veterinarian who founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin. Great to have her with us today. She's doing a wonderful job answering your questions, that's for sure. And speaking of that, let's get another question from Steve in Wisconsin Rapids. Steve, hello.
Yes, hello. I got a German Shepherd. He's about approximately 14 months old. He loves 2% milk, and he loves eating human food. I feed him, if I get a cheeseburger, he gets a cheeseburger. If I cook, he eats half, you know? So is that good for a dog?
Yeah, worried about that. Okay, what do you think, Dr. Greer?
Well, the general recommendation is to try not to exceed 10% of their diet being a non-dog food diet. So if 90% of what he eats is dog food and 10% is your food or human food, it's probably okay. Now, there's a few limitations on what we want to feed. So we have to watch things. Of course, you know, at 14 months old, most male German Shepherds don't have a problem with their weight. They're generally pretty slender and fit yet. But as they get older, we can see weight problems. And then there's a few foods that don't make sense to me or make sense to anybody about why they're toxic to dogs, but they are. So xylitol is a sugar sweetener, artificial sweetener seen in a lot of candy and gum. We have to avoid those. Grapes and raisins. A lot of people are aware of it now, but we still haven't completely figured out why a certain number of dogs will react badly and go into kidney failure from those. Macadamia nuts. Again, it's hard to understand why that isn't a good idea, but I mean, they're expensive, so maybe you don't need to feed them to the dog. But if you want to share your cheeseburger or share your fries, and he's not having a weight problem and his stools are good and he's not vomiting, go for it. You know, have a good time. I think dogs enjoy those things. And I know owners do. It's really hard to talk people out of giving their dog table food. So, and that's a lot of the relationship we have with our dogs is we share our food. We, you know, a lot of us, we live alone. And so, you know, we eat meals with our family members. So why not?
Is chocolate, chocolate's another one, isn't it, that you don't want to be, you want to make sure your dog doesn't get a hold of or your cat?
It has to take a pretty significant amount of chocolate. And the darker the chocolate, the more dangerous it is. So if they eat a chocolate cupcake or an Oreo, there's not enough chocolate in there to cause them harm. If they chew up a bag of chocolate chips that are the dark or semi-sweet, then that can become toxic. This time of year, Easter candy is a big deal. We see a lot of dogs raiding the Easter candy basket, so we want to be careful with that, especially because the wrappers can also cause us issues. It's not just the chocolate, it's the plastic and the foil that go down with it, because dogs don't take time to peel those. They just eat them as they are.
Oh, on to Sarah in Fitchburg. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. I do have a question, but it's about Lyme disease. I have a 3-year-old dog, and last year I had her vaccinated against Lyme and went back in this year to get her revaccinated, and she tested positive for Lyme. So I was surprised, as was my vet, and they did do a urine sample, and there's no bad protein levels, I think, in that sample, so it hasn't reached her kidneys. And they are recommending a course of antibiotics. And I just wanted to get your guest's opinion on this.
Hmm. Yeah, and this is a difficult topic because it's a little hard to figure out what to do with a dog that tests positive but doesn't have symptoms. And the general consensus has been to treat, and I think your veterinarian is correct in putting the dog on antibiotics. The concern is that it can linger in the body for an extended period of time and can cause some serious problems, including kidney failure, as your veterinarian is already testing for. So I think it's a good idea to treat. It's a little frustrating to feel like I thought I did everything right. I thought by vaccinating, I wasn't going to have this happen. So I understand your concern. However, it does give you a bit of a wake-up call to say, okay, so clearly you have ticks in the environment, and next year it could be anaplasmosis or Ehrlichia, which are other tick-borne diseases that we frequently see and frequently test for. We see a lot of all three of those in Wisconsin. There's probably a number of other tick-borne diseases that we don't even have identified and don't have tests for. So I think over the course of time, we're going to see an increasing number of these diseases come up. There's also been a little discussion about whether Lyme disease and some of the other tick-borne diseases, especially the Bartonellas, can cause certain forms of bloodborne cancer and spleen cancer. So I'd be really careful with tick control and just take it for granted that your dog is going to have the possibility of tick exposure. There's also an additional test called a C6 that some veterinary clinics will run to see how high the Lyme titer is. And it should be under 30 if the dog doesn't have an active infection, and it would be over 30 if they do have an active infection. We've seen dogs up in the 800 range, and those are dogs that are really, really sick with Lyme disease. So don't take any chances with your dog. If your vet says antibiotics, then I would definitely do that. And then make sure your tick control is really good for this year.
Sarah, thank you so much for calling. And related question, Barb in an email asked if, and this has to do with a cat, she's wondering if her 8-month, if the 8-month Seresto cat tick collar is safe for an 18-year-old cat. Must be an outdoor cat.
Yeah. And generally, the medication that we recommend the strongest for those older cats is either going to be Revolution, which is a topical, or Frontline, which is a topical. I don't think I've seen any studies on elderly patients, dog or cat, with a Seresto collar. It does have Ametraz as the active ingredient, which is a little bit stronger than some of the others. So I'd be careful with that. And perhaps reach for Revolution instead, which you just have to apply to the back of the neck once a month. It's pretty easy to use. And I think the safety factor of that is a lot better than the Seresto.
Ken in Libertyville, Illinois, will give you a chance. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good morning or afternoon. I've got a question. We have a cat, a male domestic short hair. He's about 12 to 13 years old. And for the last 2 to 3 years, he has had really bad chronic, rhinitis. So he goes into sneezing fits. He's dripping, mucus and snot and stuff. He has runny eyes, not mucusy, but like he has clogged tear ducts. And so we've taken him to the vet multiple times. They've even anesthetized him and done like a sinus flush and things like that. And they can't figure out what's causing it. And he doesn't have any involvement so no skin involvement. He's not itchy or biting at his skin. His stools are fine. He's not vomiting. It's all like in his head and nose and sinuses. And, I just want his quality of life to be somewhat better. And he's generally a happy cat, but he just goes into these sneezing fits and, there's snot on the walls from him, expelling it. And it's, And it's been going on for years now. And so we're just wondering if you had an opinion on it.
Sure. It brings new meaning to textured walls, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you may want to think about having a CT scan done. Those are a couple $1,000. They do require full anesthesia, but it sounds like he's tolerated anesthesia well in the past. And that CT scan can determine if there's a polyp, a mass, a granuloma, a foreign body, anything up in his sinus, in his passages that won't show up on x-ray and won't flush out easily. So you may want to think about having that done. Sometimes they'll also take a biopsy at the same time if they see something suspicious. So there are a few places in Wisconsin that do have CT scans. So CAT scan for a cat. So there are a few places you can do those, and you may want to check into that. I think, with the amount of concern that you have and the fact that he's only 12, because he may live to be 18 or 19 years old, that you can improve his quality of life if you can get a more solid diagnosis, maybe a culture to find out what antibiotics, maybe a biopsy. But for sure, I would talk about a CT scan. They do them at the veterinary school. There's some referral practices that do them as well. So I'd be checking into that for him, because it sounds like his quality of life is really important to you. So I'd jump in.
Do that, Ken. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org. Let's turn to Ann in Racine. Ann, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks. I love your show. I have a quick question and a long question. The quick one is, are cats able to get Lyme disease?
Almost never. Part of it is that they don't let ticks attach. They're very body aware, and they'll find the tick and get it licked off before it attaches. And secondly, we think they have an increased resistance to Lyme disease compared to people and dogs.
Okay. And you had another question, Ann.
Yes, yes, I do. And that question is, I have a cat. We've had her 12 years, and she was a rescue, so at least a year or maybe more old when we got her. And she was always a little sick and recently dropped a whole bunch of weight. And so I took her to the vet, and several hundred dollars later, I'm told she is in perfect health. There's, and I have not seen any evidence of excessive thirst or any of that. So I was worried about her thyroid, but they did an extra test on her thyroid, and they said there was absolutely nothing wrong with her. Perfect health. So I'm a little worried that there's something they're not seeing.
How old is your cat?
We've had her 12 years.
12 years.
And she was an adult when we got her from a rescue. So she is to add on at least a year or two beyond that. So yeah. I'm just curious as to what happened to her that all of a sudden she dropped this weight.
Sure. So the three most common things that we see causing cats to lose weight will be kidney disease, kidney failure, thyroid disease, and diabetes, sugar diabetes. If they've ruled all those out, which will be done on the kind of blood panel it sounds like you had done, then unfortunately the fourth place that I'd be looking, and I hate to tell you this, but I'd be looking for a possibility of cancer. Does she have vomiting, diarrhea, any other symptoms of anything?
Nope. There's been no changes.
Is good?
I'm sorry, what?
Her appetite is good?
Yes. Yes, no changes.
Okay. And what are you feeding? Are you feeding an indoor cat diet, a hairball diet, a regular cat diet?
It's a regular diet. It's N and D, so it's one of the more high-end diets. I try to keep her out of the kitten chow because I know that's protein, because there is a younger cat and we've been feeding him. But yeah, she eats a normal diet and she eats well. She has a good appetite. She plays and so, interacts with the others, and she's just a normal cat.
How long have you had this younger cat?
About 6 months now.
Do you think she's more active because she has a younger cat in the house? Is he either playing with her or tormenting her?
No, I don't think so, because we got him, and we had a cat that was a year old, and when we got him, the two of them just play all the time, and she really doesn't interact with the kitten.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, kitten food really isn't that bad for an older cat as long as her kidney function is fine. So you may try the kitten food for a bit and see if you can get some weight on her, but I would be talking to your veterinarian about the possibility of doing some additional diagnostics, some kind of imaging, x-ray or ultrasound to see if they can find anything. Normally, if there's cancer, there's going to be some other symptom. It's going to be more evident. I wouldn't be at all surprised, but what she's just got these two young cats in the house, and she's just a little bit stressed or a little bit more active, and that may be contributing. So they do make some appetite stimulants, but it sounds like you don't need that. It sounds like I'm going to guess that she's just really a lot more active with these two young cats in the house, and you may not see all the dynamics because there may be things that are going on when you're gone or when you're sleeping that she's just really either busy or really stressed and isn't keeping the weight on as much.
Yeah. I remember a friend talking about having two dogs who seemed to get along really well together, lived together for a long, long time, and then one of them died and the other one became much happier.
Yeah, and you don't expect that because you
didn't
expect
it at all.
Yeah, thought they were friendly, but the dynamics are, we don't always pick up on the nuances of them. So sometimes we're a little unaware of what goes on in our houses.
Thanks again, Ann, for calling. Kay in Berlin, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for this particular program, Larry. I really appreciate it. I have a 9.5-year-old Mastiff mix, and for the last 2.5 weeks, he has been gagging and hacking and coughing. not bringing anything up. We took him to the vet. They did x-rays, chest x-rays. They checked his throat to make sure there was nothing stuck in there. And gave us antibiotics. They didn't really find anything. No pneumonia, no lesions in the lungs, nothing like that, nothing in the throat. And I'm wondering, I bought some biscuits from Petco's buffet thing about the same time. Is it possible maybe he's allergic to those biscuits?
It's a possibility. That's not a typical reaction that we'll see as an allergy. But the first thing I do is would be eliminate that and make sure that he's only eating soft food for maybe a few days to a couple of weeks and see if he's just got some upper airway or throat irritation. But there can be a lot of things that can be difficult to find. Did they anesthetize him or sedate him to take the x-rays and look in his throat?
Yes.
Or did they do it awake?
No, they anesthetized him.
Yeah. So sometimes it becomes a function that the airway isn't working the way it used to. Normally we see that in labs or Labradors or in the brachycephalics, the short faced dogs, where they can have some functional issues where the airway stops opening and closing at the right time. And so they'll start to sputter and spew. Which antibiotic did they use? Do you recall?
We put them on amoxicillin. And
okay.
Also
sometimes
Robitussin DM.
Mm-hmm. And I think the Robitussin is a good idea, but you may want to talk to your veterinarian about trying a second antibiotic. It may just be that the irritation or the kennel cough or whatever he's got going on hasn't responded to amoxicillin. So sometimes using a different antibiotic can be helpful, and your veterinarian can help you with that. We use a lot of doxycycline, a lot of azithromycin, a lot of Clavamox. So you may just speak to them about an alternative, and if that doesn't do it, then maybe take another look to see if there's something down his airway. We've seen you can have big tonsils. Dogs have tonsils. People don't always know that. They can have an enlarged tonsil. You can have something that isn't really caught there, but there can be a polyp of some kind. So if it's not responding to a second antibiotic, I would go back and have your veterinarian reassess the situation.
Good luck, Kay. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeannie in Wisconsin Rapids, your turn. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, good morning. I have a two-part question about my three-year-old cat. He occasionally, once every 2 weeks to once a month, does not get even try to use his litter box when he's pooping. And so we'll find it on the carpeting in the living room or upstairs on the carpeting. We don't have a clue what to do with that. I know this probably isn't the right theory, but it seems like it's when he's upset about not being able to do something, like getting into a room, and he meows and meows, and then if you ignore him, he poops right in front of the room on the floor. So
okay.
Another thing is he's very large, and we're watching his diet, but he weighs over 16 pounds, and he really needs to lose weight, but it seems like we're keeping him on really watching it, and he's just not losing that weight. He's very heavy.
Okay. So you said he's a long hair cat?
He's a medium haired tuxedo cat,
okay.
Not long hair.
So do you see him squat, or is there stool that gets caught on his hair and he leaves the litter box with it attached and it accidentally falls off? Do you actually see him squatting to have stools outside the box?
No, we never catch him actually doing this, and this isn't anywhere. This is not near the litter boxes. They're in the basement. He's doing this up on the main floor of the house on the carpeting.
Okay. So what he's asking you for is another litter box. He's sending you loud and clear signals that he needs a box on the main floor. And with a cat, a big cat, sometimes I don't even buy a litter box. I'll buy a shallow storage box that you can put cat litter in. And then he's got a big space to go. And the American house is not well set up for a litter box on the main floor. It's really hard to find a place outside the kitchen, the laundry room, the bedroom, the bathroom. Where are you going to put another litter box? But I think he's sending you loud and clear messages that he's unhappy with his litter box situation. And so you can either go along with him and give him a new box, or you can continue to fight with him, but you're going to lose the battle. So I'd give up and just get a big storage box that's shallow and give him litter and say, dude, go for it. It'll save you a lot of grief.
I've got one of those painter's boxes, and it's large, and I've seen both cats in it at the same time. I mean, it's big enough they can both get in at the same time.
Yeah, well, you can get the washing machine trays that are very shallow and large. They're about 2.5 feet square. You know, be creative. A litter box doesn't have to come from the pet department. Go into the store and look at whatever storage box or plastic container, whether it's, you know, a hardware store or, you know, just a department store, and see what you can come up with, because he's sending you smoke signals. He wants something new.
Good luck, Jeannie. Thank you so much for calling. Our guest today, Dr. Marty Greer, veterinarian. She founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lamira, and she has offices as well in Sun Prairie. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at your pet's health. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, Dr. Marty Greer, veterinarian. She founded Veterinary Village in Lamira, Wisconsin, a couple of offices as well in Sun Prairie. And you have a question, I hope you'll join in. And it's going to be hard to do it right now because our lines are all filled, but you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Sue in Watertown, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Larry and Dr. Greer, thank you for taking my call. We took our dog in back in December for what was supposed to be a simple dental cleaning. And the next day, she was stumbling all over the place. It continued to get worse. And 3 weeks later, we were finally given a referral to the Madison veterinary specialist, to a neurologist there, and they diagnosed her with ataxia, and it was from the dental cleaning. I'd like to know how often you've seen this or heard of this, and just what people need to be aware of when they take their animal in for a dental cleaning.
Sure.
Sure. Were they able to identify anything other than ataxia? Because that's basically a description of being incoordinated, but it doesn't really tell us the underlying problem. Did they think it was related to the dental?
They did, yes. The neurologist definitely did. Okay. Now, they, you know, they did 3 different blood work, you know, different results on blood work, and everything was fine with that. She was in such a bad state by the time we were referred to the neurologist that it would not have been a good idea to do an MRI, you know, so that we could go further with it. Okay. And we did end up having to have her put down.
Oh, sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. Well, Dr. Greer, what do you think?
Well, I guess the question would be whether she had any kind of an anesthetic unfortunate event. Was there any time that she stopped breathing for a short period of time, or had any other anesthetic complications? And it sounds like it has to be related to something pertaining to that. It is not at all common to have that happen. Anytime we use anesthesia, no matter what the procedure, whether it seems routine or not, it has a risk associated with it. And unfortunately, the same occurs in humans as well. There can be anesthetic accidents. I'm sure your veterinary clinic was very careful and certainly didn't intend for anything to go awry for you. But unfortunately, you know, we have to rely on anesthesia for these procedures because we can't do most of them without anesthesia. Dogs won't sit in the chair and say, ah, very well, and we can't get under the gums and do the things that we need to for good cleanings. But it's still really heartbreaking to have that kind of situation happen. And fortunately, it is rare, but certainly not unheard of that we can see that. So ataxia just is more of a description than an underlying cause diagnosis. And without knowing more about the anesthetic period, what drugs they used and what her oxygen levels were during the procedure and some of those things, it's really difficult to speak to any more detail than that.
Yeah. Sue, I'm sorry for your loss. I appreciate your call. Well, we'll turn to Mary in Monroe next. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, you're welcome. Good morning. I have a 12-year-old female cat, and just recently, the last couple of weeks, I noticed, I don't know, can cats have hemorrhoids? She's got a red protrusion, like a bubble little protrusion, coming out of her hind end, and I'm not sure what it is, but it's bright red. Not bleeding,
yes.
Just bright red.
Right. And cats don't get hemorrhoids. Dogs don't get hemorrhoids. We, as humans, walk upright. Dogs and cats walk horizontally. So our hemorrhoids are a function of body weight sitting down against our pelvis. And that's really not a good situation for us. But dogs and cats don't get hemorrhoids. However, she could have a problem with a polyp that's just inside the rectum. Those are pretty easy to remove. They would require an anesthetic period, but your veterinarian can probably check with doing an exam, doing a digital exam and seeing if they can feel anything in there. It's pretty uncommon for cats and dogs to get rectal polyps, but they happen and they're usually not serious, but you probably do want to address it before it starts to bleed, because that can be kind of a mess if she starts having blood after she comes out of the box. She may do some damage to your house, so I'd get her checked out.
Good luck, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Floyd in Keel, Wisconsin. Hi, Floyd.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
We have a little dog here who has diabetes, has terrible bad breath, and we've tried millions of things, and nothing seems to work. I just wonder if there's any ideas.
Well, there are a couple things. There are some veterinarians, and us included, that will do pulse dosing of antibiotics, which means that for 5 days, every 30, every month, we'll put the dogs on an antibiotic that's appropriate for dental disease. So that can be clindamycin, it can be Clavamox. There's a couple antibiotics that can be used. And there's also an injectable antibiotic, so that might help to give that periodically to just reduce the amount of bacteria in the mouth. There are dental treats and dental chews. It sounds like you've probably tried those. Hill's makes a product called TD. Everybody knows about Greenies. There's a lot of those. But when push comes to shove, it may just get to the point that you'll need to take her in and have her anesthetized. It's a little different for a diabetic patient in how we manage their food intake and how we manage their insulin for those anesthetic periods. But just because she's diabetic doesn't mean she can't have a dental cleaning. And you may find that she feels a lot better and smells a lot better and is a lot healthier after the dental cleaning. So it's a bit of a leap of faith to anesthetize a patient that's diabetic. But with the kind of advances that we have in anesthesia and monitoring now, they can check her blood sugar during the period. They can adjust her insulin dose accordingly. And they can probably do a good job of getting her mouth cleaned up and making her a lot healthier after that cleaning.
Somebody else wondered if diabetic dogs could or should eat Greenies.
As long as you account for them in their insulin intake, yes. The rule of thumb with diabetes is to give them the same food intake and the same exercise every day. Because, you know, if people go out and have a big dinner or have a big piece of chocolate cake, they may adjust what they do for insulin. Dogs and cats, we don't do that with. So basically, you need to be consistent every single day. So if you're going to give a Greenie, give it every day so that you account for that. You don't want to give it once a week and have this wild sugar shifts. Now, they tend to not have a lot of carbohydrates in them, but there are some, so I'd be careful with that.
Floyd, good luck. Thank you for calling. Mary in New London, we go to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I have a rescue dog. He's possibly 2 or 3. We're not completely sure. He had reduced mobility in one of his hind legs, and based upon x-rays, his vet has recommended an FHO, the femoral head osteotomy. And I'm just wondering what sort of quality of life the dogs have after that procedure is done.
Okay.
That's a great question. How big is the dog? What does he weigh?
He's about 60 pounds.
Okay. So there's an FHO, which removes the head of the femur, and basically the dog then forms a false joint. The alternative procedure to that is to do a total hip replacement. Has anybody talked to you about that as an option?
It was suggested. It's the cost that's probably prohibited.
Mm-hmm. It is a big difference in cost. But from a quality of life perspective, I have one of our own personal dogs who many years ago had both hips replaced. And yes, it's expensive. It's the difference between that and taking a vacation. So I completely understand the cost, because even to me, it's still very expensive. I didn't get it for a discount because they can't discount those things. So really, it comes down to having to make that decision. Is he on any pain medication at this point?
he is, but that's because he recently had surgery to remove a tooth that was growing horizontally.
Oh, dear. So it sounds like you got yourself a bit of a lemon here.
Indeed.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
He doesn't show that he doesn't act like he's in pain with his hip. He doesn't whine. He doesn't have trouble jumping or going up and down stairs. So that's the other thing is I don't know if he's, they think he might have been hit by a car.
So what do you think?
Well, I think surgery is going to be your option, but once you do an FHO, you can't go back and do a total hip replacement. So I'd buy a lottery ticket and hope you win. It's too late to get pet insurance on him because he's already got this pre-existing condition. So I think he's going to need surgery at some point. But a lot of dogs, if you can keep them lean and get them on an appropriate diet and glucosamines and pain medication, you can put it off for a bit, maybe save up a little money. Put up a GoFundMe page. You know, go for it.
Go for it. Mary, thank you so much for calling. Dr. Marty Greer, our guest today, veterinarian. She founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin, has offices in Sun Prairie as well, two of them, as a matter of fact. And she'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Dr. Greer. I'm Larry Mueller. We're taking a look at your pet's health on the show today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Marty Greer. She's doing a great job, isn't she? She's a veterinarian with a lot of experience. She specializes in canine pediatrics and reproduction. She founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lamira, Wisconsin, and then later opened a couple of office satellite offices or vet offices in Sun Prairie. So as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in with your own questions. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go right back to the phones and talk with Cindy in Mequon. Cindy, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a one-year-old female, very short-haired cat, and she's got a problem with being stinky. She is not big on grooming. There's no discharge or anything, and I just wonder, is there anything I can do or suggestions you might have? I've tried the wipes. Of course, she doesn't like them, but, you know, I wipe her off, and then, you know, next time she uses the box, she'll be stinky again.
How old is she again, by the way? I'm sorry.
1 year old.
1 year old. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's problems with just the odor? Is that what you're saying?
It's the odor, yeah. And she doesn't groom, okay. And we got her when she was 2 months old, so I don't know if that's something to do with it.
It could. Yeah, it could. So have you tried any kind of clipping of the area so that the hair is shorter? Is it vaginal or is it rectal? Where do you think this is
coming
from?
More rectal.
Okay. And have you had her anal sacs checked by a groomer or by your veterinarian?
She has had a checkup and everything looked okay.
But did they specifically do a rectal exam?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. I'd probably go back and talk to them about anal sacs because that can cause some pretty significant odor and see if that's where the source of the problem is coming from. It is rare to have to take the anal sacs out of a cat, but it is possible. Anal sacs really don't serve a function in dogs and cats other than to notify one another that there's something to be nervous about. So they don't need those from a health perspective. And if that's the source of the odor and it's making it hard to live with her, then I would have that checked out. And you're going to know after a visit or two, if they express them and the odor goes away and then it comes back again, that's the source of the problem. And I would talk about surgically removing those. If that's not the source of the problem, then we need to chase down what it is. If it's, you know, that if her stools aren't normal, that she needs a probiotic, if she's got coat matting around her vulva and she's not keeping herself clean there, it very well may be that she was so young when you got her that she didn't learn good grooming skills.
Yeah. Cindy, there you go. Good luck with that. I appreciate your call. Lori in Sparta, it's your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi, this is just, the timing is great. My neighbors have a calico route in the country, and I think she either wandered to their house or was dropped off. And the vet at that time thought she was about 2. So now we think she's about 17. And for an outdoor cat, that's pretty remarkable because she loves
yes.
to be out.
Yeah.
But she has developed, I don't know if it's like a cyst, but she has a sac that hangs under her belly right next to one of her hind legs. And she stopped eating. She's not her old self at all. She's been mm-hmm. to the vet, and she's had all the tests and everything, and they said they were okay. But then this, I don't know if it wasn't there or developed after that, and she is going back. But I was curious. We're like her grandma and grandpa.
Mm.
Comes to each of our houses back and forth, and lately we've been carrying her because it's hard for her to walk.
Mm.
Do you have any idea what this could have come from?
Well, it's most likely some kind of a growth or a tumor. A hernia in that area in a cat of that age is pretty unusual. So I'd be concerned that it's from some kind of a growth. And it sounds like at 17, it might be a challenge to have her have a surgery that would be that extensive. But an X-ray and ultrasound, you know, the veterinarian needs to check that out a little bit more carefully. Just because all of her blood tests were normal, that just means her organ function is fine. It doesn't tell us anything about that growth outside. So I'd be concerned, and it may be that it's going to be difficult to manage this. So she may have reached her 17-year limit, and that's a remarkable time, like you've said, for a cat that's outdoors and that found you as a stray.
Yeah, for sure. I think that with the average lifespan of an outdoor cat is a couple years less, isn't it, than an indoor cat?
It's usually much less. It's usually only a couple of years, like 2, 3, 4 years. So most of them succumb to vehicles or prey or you know, other things, really. It's hard for cats outside to live that long. So you've done a great job with her.
Elizabeth in Unalaska, it's your turn. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, I just wanted to add a comment to the woman who called in about the 12-year-old cat who had lost some considerable weight. And, I mean, I'm a veterinarian myself, and I agree to the things that, you know, thinking about the three sort of top things we think about in cats. But one thing that we do see is inflammatory bowel, where they're not absorbing their nutrients as well as they used to. And that's something that some cats have absolutely no signs at all except weight loss. I mean, they may have a great appetite. So doing even a little additional blood testing can be helpful there. I mean, the woman said that her lab work was perfect, but kind of going, you know, another question, but imaging absolutely is a recommendation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Usually with inflammatory bowel disease or lymphoma, you're going to have, you know, diarrhea. You're going to have some other indication on the lab work. The protein is low. Something else is usually showing up, but I agree. And if she's indoors, it's unlikely to be parasites, but she's brought young cats into the house. So a parasitism is a possibility as well. So I think you're right that there's some additional testing that needs to be done.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Appreciate the call. Dave in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a behavioral question. 15-month-old golden doodle. The dog chews on seemingly everything in the house. Something can be delivered out on the front porch. He'll grab the package, tear it apart. Just at, a loss as to what to do about it, if you've got any suggestions.
Mouth with paws.
Yeah, 60 pounds of mouth and about 10 pounds of feet. And unfortunately, that's pretty common. We see a lot of dogs that do damage to personal items. The best news is it sounds like he hasn't eaten anything to the point that he's needed to have surgery to have it removed. We had a dog at the practice yesterday that's already had one abdominal procedure to remove a foreign body and is working on his second one, and his birthday to be one is today. So unfortunately, that's pretty common. So essentially, it's a matter of managing the environment, because you're not going to manage his behavior for a long time. It's going to take him till he's old before he stops doing those things. So eating socks and underwear and TV remotes and cell phones and all those things become very expensive and very difficult to manage. There is a product called Outfoxed. It's kind of a neat product. It's a hood that goes on a dog. It's really meant to keep foxtails out of their nose when they're running in the field, which is why it's called Outfoxed. But it's just a mesh hood you can buy for the dog. It comes in different sizes, and it does significantly reduce the chances that he's going to be able to get into trouble by chewing things up. Could he get the hood off if he's left unsupervised, and could he get to something? Yes, he could, but it just makes it a little bit harder. They can drink through it. They can pant through it. So it's not like putting a muzzle on them, because you don't want to leave a dog muzzled unattended. So it's a nice alternative. You can buy them on their website, Outfoxed. You can find them on Amazon. They're about $50. And compared to losing another package that Amazon delivered on your front porch, it sounds like a pretty good price.
There you go, Dave. Thank you for calling. Well, Cindy in Fitchburg, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Cindy.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an almost 7-year-old Airedale who shares the house with a 13-year-old Devon Rex cat, and the cat loves the dog and washes the dog all the time. We have decided to use NexGard as flea control and tick control on the dog, but I'm concerned about its effectiveness. 4 years ago, the dog had a tick-borne disease, anaplasmosis, treated with antibiotic, and she got better, but continues to test positive, and we think that's a residual. So I'm just curious, is Frontline or some of the other topicals better at tick control than the oral NexGard?
Well, I like the orals. There are 4 of them on the market. There's NexGard, Revecto, Credelio, and Simparica. And I think overall, they're a good product. They're all in the same drug class. They all have slightly different chemical analysis. And I think the advantage of using those is it would be less likely for the cat to have any exposure to it. It is resecreted. It is absorbed through the GI tract and then resecreted into the oil glands of the dog. But I don't think the cat would be likely to ingest as much of it as if you used a topical like Frontline or Advantix or any of the other topicals, Revolution, any of those. Probably the very safest one would be Revolution, because that's got a cat label on it as well. And a lot of these products that you're talking about using for dogs are not labeled for cats. So you might want to go to Revolution if you're looking at a topical. The advantage of the orals is you really get nose to tail protection. It gets down into their toes. It gets to the tip of the tail. The topicals don't get quite as well distributed through the entire skin sebaceous system. So I think you're probably going to get slightly better control with an oral. And you can combine them if you've got a really significant problem. For instance, if you use one and then you're going to go someplace where you know the ticks are really bad that time of year, you can actually use an oral and a topical both, because they work differently. So you can get better protection. But for the cat's sake, I'd probably either use an oral or I would use Revolution as the topical choice of my preference.
Cindy, thank you. Good luck. Appreciate it. Laurel in Door County, your turn. Hi, Laurel.
Hi there. Please pull over here a second. I'm driving. Okay, I'm all yours.
All right. You have a question for us. You got a cat with a cough.
Yeah. He's a senior cat. I adopted him about 3 years ago. He's probably about 15 or 16. He's had a dry cough for over a year, and it has turned in the last several months into a very gurgly cough, and he's throwing up about once a week. He's a long-haired cat. I'm pretty sure he's a Maine Coon. He's black and white, but he's big and long and looks like a Maine Coon, but he never throws up hairballs. I've never seen him throw up a hairball in 3 years. So I'm kind of wondering. I've had him to the vet. I've spent about $1,000 so far. 2 different vets, they can't find a thing wrong with them. And I'm wondering if maybe he could have just a very large hairball stuck in his stomach.
Good question. When they checked him out, I assume they took x-rays?
Yes, they did. Okay. The one vet said that she thinks that he's got asthma, which I just don't think that's the issue.
And asthma is pretty characteristic on an x-ray. It usually shows up pretty clearly. So I would probably agree with you. As far as hairballs go, there's a couple different ways to approach them. There's the gels of medications that are on the market, like the laxatives. They're basically petroleum, like Vaseline flavored with malt. There are hairball diets that they make for a lot of cats now that are basically just a higher fiber diet to improve the chances that those hairballs pass through. But my favorite is called Capilex. Again, it's a prescription item, but it's easy to get. If your veterinarian doesn't have it, they can probably write a prescription for you to get it. It's called Capilex. It's C-A-P-I-L-E-X. And basically, it breaks down the hairball matrix and allows the cat to pass it. So if there is something caught in his stomach or if he's having a problem, that will help them to pass. Now, it comes in a box of 28. So you give one a day, and you can try one box of it and see how he likes it. It does come as a chewable. My cats used to fight about who got to it first when I would be peeling the package open. They'd be elbowing each other out of the way because it tastes so good. I don't know what they do with it, but it tastes so good that the cats won't – you don't have to push it down like a normal pill. They'll just gobble it right up. So I would talk to your veterinarian about Capilex as an alternative to some of the things that they've done. And if that doesn't fix it, then you may need to have him checked out further. But I'd start with Capilex. It's $30 is a lot cheaper than what you've been doing so far. So I'd go there.
Thanks, Laurel, for calling. Shirley emailed. She has a cat that's 11, having problems with her getting cystitis. She has to give her antibiotics about every 3 weeks. Any ideas? She's changed her litter to almost dust-free and is changing her diet. She gives her a dry food as well as some wet food and for that, and she adds water or chicken broth to get her better hydrated.
Yeah, and bladder problems are really common in cats. I would make sure that she's been imaged with either an ultrasound or an x-ray to see if she has any stones in her bladder. If she has stones, then you need to get to the source of those. Some will dissolve with diet if they're made of magnesium and ammonium and phosphate, those triple phosphate stones. If they're calcium oxalate, they won't dissolve. But most cats with bladder infections don't actually have a bacterial component to it. It tends to be more of an interstitial cystitis like women get. So an antibiotic may not be the solution to your problem. And since you've tried it so many times, I would be suspicious that that's where you're going. I think a diet change is probably your best bet. Yes, keep her well hydrated. Get her a drinking fountain. Give her chicken broth in her water. Whatever you need to do to get her to drink more. The canned food can be helpful because there's more fluid in it. But I would look really hard at one of the prescription foods that are made for bladder disease in cats. Now, there are over-the-counter products, but the pH control and the magnesium, ammonium, and phosphate levels in the food are not as well controlled if they're not prescription diets, which is why prescription diets cost a little bit more. But the cost of a prescription diet is far less than the cost of repeatedly going in and getting antibiotics and thinking about what you're doing to her body by continually having to use an antibiotic. It's not healthy for her to do that. So I would increase her fluid intake. I would talk really hard with your veterinarian about an appropriate diet. And if they haven't already x-rayed or ultrasounded her bladder to look for stone or stones, I would have that done to make sure that there's nothing going on in there that needs to be eliminated before you can get to the source of the problem.
Sandy emailed. She has a rescue cat, 10 to 12 years old. And at the last visit, they did blood work. Results indicate she has a very high likelihood to develop kidney disease in the next couple of years. No symptoms at this time. The vet gave her prescriptions for the different prescription kidney foods. In reading about it, it does not appear to her that changing the cat's diet now will have an impact on the likelihood of her developing kidney disease later. She's concerned about restricting her nutritional intake now.
Sure. And all the companies that make these prescription diets for kidney in cats have very carefully formulated these so that they can be used long term. I absolutely would reach for that first. I think that's a really important first step. And I think we've got some pretty good data that shows that it does reduce the speed at which kidney disease develops. They did a study at University of Minnesota a number of years ago where they had dogs, not cats, with naturally occurring kidney disease. And they put half of the dogs on just a mixture of any kind of dog food that anybody was feeding. They put it all together, mixed it up, sent it home with the people. And then they sent the other half of the dogs home with a prescription diet for kidney disease. They were planning on doing the study for 2 years. At the end of 1 year, they cracked the code on the diet. They figured out that so many more dogs were still alive on the prescription diet for the kidneys that they considered it to be immoral and unethical to continue the study. They called it off at 1 year instead of two.
Wow.
So I would absolutely reach for that. It doesn't cost a lot more to feed a prescription diet to a cat. They don't eat that much. And it makes such a huge difference in their longevity. You want to manage your blood pressure. There's other things you need to do as well. But the diet is the first thing you have to do. And as long as you have to feed her anyway, you might as well feed her a diet that's going to slow the progression of her kidney disease and get a couple more years out of her. It's well worth it.
Bob in Wauwatosa wonders in an email how important it is to get dogs vaccinated for Lyme. He has a 9-month-old lab mix that often runs through the woods and fields in southeast Wisconsin.
Well, in Wisconsin, we have to face the reality of Lyme disease, Anaplasmosis, Ehrlichia, some of the other tick-borne diseases as well. So you have to do something for disease control. And whether you do a topical or an oral medication to prevent fleas and ticks or a collar to prevent them, or you decide to vaccinate for Lyme disease, with you living where you live, you're going to have ticks, you're going to have Lyme disease. It's just a hard, cold fact. The vaccination for Lyme disease is very safe, but it only protects against Lyme disease. It doesn't prevent the ticks. It doesn't prevent the tick bites. It doesn't prevent the ticks from coming into your environment. And it doesn't protect the dog against the other tick-borne diseases. So you can do both a vaccination and tick control, or you can pick one or the other. But Lyme disease is huge. And we see dogs every year in our practice that die from Lyme disease. And that just breaks my heart when we have something that we could prevent. So by all means, decide what for your lifestyle is most logical for tick and flea control or for Lyme disease control, because you have to do something or you're going to end up with it. Everybody ends up with it eventually if they've got a dog out in the areas where you're letting your dog be. And that's quality of life. They should be out running around where the grass is long and the ticks are around. So just take good care of them.
Helen, about a year ago, emailed her dog, 13 years old or so, suddenly went blind at the same time she was exhibiting a lot of troubling behaviors, barking, always hungry, and so forth. What finally worked was changing vets and getting prescriptions for joint pain and arthritis. She's happy now and feeling better, but the question from Helen is how to protect her eyes from things like twigs. Will goggles work? And what about those halo devices so she can feel something before seeing it?
And those are great ideas. The halo device is nice because the dog has the ability to feel out around them before they run into a door or a coffee table. The doggles and the other devices similar to doggles, which are dog goggles, work great. Regular human goggles don't stay on very well, so these are modified to fit onto the dog's face better. And they make them in different sizes and colors, and you know, different companies make them, so they're pretty cool. There's a book on Amazon called Living with a Blind Dog. My son has a dog that's almost completely blind. And the tips that are in that book are really, really helpful. So I would look at getting that book and seeing if there's any other suggestions. But yes, mechanically saving the dog from running into something is huge because the poor dog is going to end up with another eye injury and you can't afford to have that happen. So be careful with them.
Dr. Marty Greer, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure talking with you. I hope you'll do this again. Thank you.
I'd love to.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was really a lot of fun. Dr. Marty Greer, who founded Veterinary Village, a small animal clinic in Lemira, Wisconsin, now has offices in two offices in Sun Prairie. Great to have her with us. We will get her back. And tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about a book about amphibians and reptiles you're going to like.